Welcome back. Last time we covered the first five plagues of Egypt, which so far have failed to motivate Pharaoh to release the Israelites, release them into the custody of the Yahwehlians. So now we'll continue with more plagues, starting in Exodus 9:8. And the Lord said unto Moses and unto Aaron, take to you handfuls of ashes of the furnace, and let Moses sprinkle it toward the heaven in the sight of Pharaoh. And it shall become small dust in all the land of Egypt, and shall be a boil breaking forth with blains upon men and upon beast throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, what are blains? The International Standard Bible Encyclopedia defines blains as pustules containing fluid around a boil or inflamed sore. And it notes that the Hebrew word translated as blains is from a root which means that which bubbles up. So they're big bubbly blisters, basically. And they took ashes of the furnace and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses sprinkled it up toward heaven. And it became a boil breaking forth with blains upon man and upon beast. So he threw this fine ash up into the air, and the dust cloud settled back down on them and produced these blisters. Very theatrical. I believe the ashes were a magician's stage prop, and the real cause of the blisters was something else entirely. There's an entire class of chemical weapons known as blistering agents, the most well-known of which is mustard gas, which was used quite a bit during World War I. And it's not actually made from mustard, by the way. And its primary effect is not on the lungs, despite what you may have been led to believe by those war movies that show the troops scrambling for their gas masks in the first moments of a gas attack. That was really the final step in their preparation for mustard gas, rather than the first. They already had on, at a minimum, long sleeves, long pants, and boots, even in the heat of summer. And this was in part to protect them from blistering agents. The Federation of American Scientists website, FAS.org, points out that blistering agents were used not only to inflict casualties, but, quote, to force opposing troops to wear full protective equipment, thus degrading fighting efficiency, rather than to kill, although exposure to such agents can be fatal. They go on to point out that the vast majority of mustard gas casualties survive. Now I want to direct your attention to the show art, which shows the moment that Moses tosses the ashes into the air. What's the main difference between the Hebrew garb and the Egyptian clothing? You can't help but notice that Moses and Aaron are almost fully covered from head to toe, while Pharaoh and his attendant have lots of skin exposed for a Yahwehlian blistering agent to go to work on, whatever that blistering agent was. Probably not mustard gas or any kind of gas. Verse 9 said it would become small dust in all the land of Egypt, which they could have pulled that off with a well-timed release from above of a blistering agent in powdered form. And since it was a visible powder, people would naturally avoid breathing it in, either by covering their mouth or in their nose or by holding their breath until the dust cloud settled down closer to the ground. So most of the damage, and pretty much all of the visible damage, would be to the skin, not to the lungs. And the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils, for the boil was upon the magicians and upon all the Egyptians, because they weren't protected. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he hearkened not unto them, as the Lord had spoken unto Moses. And the Lord said unto Moses, rise up early in the morning, and stand before Pharaoh, and say unto him, thus saith the Lord God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. For I will at this time send all my plagues upon thine heart, and upon thy servants, and upon thy people, that thou mayest know that there is none like me in all the earth. For now I will stretch out my hand, that I may smite thee and thy people with pestilence, and thou shalt be cut off from the earth. And in very deed for this cause have I raised thee up, for to shew in thee my power, and that my name may be declared throughout all the earth. As yet exaltest thou thyself against my people, that thou wilt not let them go? Behold, tomorrow, about this time, I will cause it to rain a very grievous hail, such as hath not been in Egypt since the foundation thereof, even until now. Send therefore now, and gather thy cattle, and all that thou hast in the field, for upon every man and beast which shall be found in the field, and shall not be brought home, the hail shall come down upon them, and they shall die. He that feared the word of the Lord among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his cattle flee into the houses, and he that regarded not the word of the Lord left his servants and his cattle in the field. And the Lord said unto Moses, Stretch forth thine hand toward heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, upon man and upon beast, and upon every herb of the field, throughout the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched forth his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and the fire ran along upon the ground, and the Lord rained hail upon the land of Egypt. So, what was this fire that ran along the ground? Since it was accompanied by thunder, I'm pretty sure it was ground current from lightning strikes, which, if you've seen clips of this happening, it looks like fire running along the ground, especially if you can freeze frame the exact moment that it happens, because it doesn't last long. The National Weather Service website has a photo of a dozen or so dead cows around a tall tree in the middle of a field, and it says that, quote, ground current is responsible for killing many farm animals on a yearly basis. The threat of a fatal incident is affected by the distance between contact points with the ground, and also the orientation of those contact points with respect to the lightning strike and discharge path. Farm animals have a long span between their front and back legs, making them more vulnerable to ground current from a nearby lightning strike. So, don't make the mistake of lying down on the ground to avoid lightning, because that increases the distance between your contact points. You want to get low to avoid a direct strike. You know, you certainly don't want to be the tallest thing in the field, but you don't want to stretch out on the ground and make yourself more vulnerable to a near miss. Instead, just crouch down low with your feet close together. In an Asian squat, if you can do that one, or an Appalachian squat, if you can't. So there was hail, and fire mingled with the hail. Well, hail, fire. Very grievous, such as there was none like it on all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail smote throughout all the land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both man and beast. And the hail smote every herb of the field, and brake every tree of the field. So, what size hail are we talking about here? There have been a number of reports of 8-inch diameter hailstones falling in the United States. The official record holder from South Dakota claims that his 8-inch whopper was originally 11 inches, but it partially melted because the storm knocked his power out for quite a while. It melted before he could turn it over for evaluation. You know, men are prone to exaggerate such things, though. Only in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, was there no hail. So again, it was a surgical strike, this time by the Yahwehian weather modification team. And Pharaoh sent and called for Moses and Aaron, and said unto them, I have sinned this time. The Lord is righteous, and I and my people are wicked. Entreat the Lord, for it is enough, that there be no more mighty thunderings and hail, and I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. And Moses said unto him, As soon as I am gone out of the city, I will spread abroad my hands unto the Lord, and the thunder shall cease, neither shall there be any more hail, that thou mayest know how that the earth is the Lord's. But as for thee and thy servants, I know that you will not yet fear the Lord God. And the flax and the barley were smitten, for the barley was in the ear, and the flax was bold. But the wheat and the rye were not smitten, for they were not grown up. And Moses went out of the city from Pharaoh, and spread abroad his hands unto the Lord. And the thunders and hail ceased, and the rain was not poured upon the earth. And when Pharaoh saw that the rain and the hail and the thunders were ceased, he sinned yet more, and hardened his heart, he and his servants. And the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, neither would he let the children of Israel go, as the Lord had spoken by Moses. And now we're up to chapter 10. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go in unto Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart, and the heart of his servants, that I might shew these my signs before him, and that thou mayest tell in the ears of thy son, and of thy son's son, what things I have wrought in Egypt, and my signs which I have done among them, that ye may know how that I am the Lord. So the Yahwehlians welcomed Pharaoh's intransigence, his reluctance to give up, because it would allow them to do great things that would go down in history and cement their reputation as the supreme deities, or deity, as it turned out. Whether they actually hardened his heart in some way or just relied on his innate stubbornness, I don't know. And Moses and Aaron came in unto Pharaoh and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord God of the Hebrews, How long wilt thou refuse to humble thyself before me? Let my people go, that they may serve me. Else if thou refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow will I bring the locusts into thy coast, and they shall cover the face of the earth, that one cannot be able to see the earth, and they shall eat the residue of that which is escaped, which remaineth unto you from the hail, and shall eat every tree which groweth for you out of the field. So these are actual locusts, not cicadas, which are sometimes called locusts, especially the 17-year variety and so on. Cicadas don't destroy crops. And if you didn't hear them singing their summer mating songs, you know, that's the sound of summer, you probably wouldn't even know that they were around. Locusts are big grasshoppers that travel in swarms. When they become overpopulated, they become very destructive. And in fact, when this happens, we refer to it as a locust plague. The variety of locust we're probably talking about here is the desert locust, which just in the past few years became overpopulated due to two cyclones dumping heavy rainfall on the Arabian Peninsula, one in May 2018 and one in October 2018. The Wikipedia article on the desert locust says, This allowed conditions to be favorable for three generations of breeding, which caused an estimated 8,000-fold increase in desert locust numbers that went unchecked because the area was so remote it could not be accessed by national locust teams. So, what can we get from this? When do we have desert locust plagues? It's when the desert receives unusually heavy rainfall, or hailfall, since it wouldn't have taken long for those 8 to 11 inch diameter hailstones weighing 2 or 3 pounds each to melt into rainwater. Each 8-inch hailstone would yield about a quart of water. So, you know, that would be a lot of rainwater, hail water. And they shall fill thy houses, the locusts will, that is, and the houses of all thy servants, and the houses of all the Egyptians, which neither thy fathers nor thy fathers' fathers have seen since the day that they were upon the earth unto this day. And he turned himself and went out from Pharaoh. And Pharaoh's servants said unto him, How long shall this man be a snare unto us? Let the men go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Knowest thou not yet that Egypt is destroyed? Now the Hebrew phrase translated as the Lord their God here is Yahweh Elohim. Yahweh is translated as the Lord, of course, and Elohim is translated as their God. But in many other places in the Bible, Elohim is translated as their gods. For example, in Exodus 23:33, where God warns his chosen people to keep foreigners out of their country, for it says, If you serve their gods, Elohim, it will surely be a snare to you. So why would we not translate Yahweh Elohim as their Yahwehian gods rather than the Lord their God? And Moses and Aaron were brought again unto Pharaoh, and he said unto them, Go, serve the Lord your God, Yahweh Elohim. But who are they that shall go? And again, Elohim is translated in other places as your gods instead of your God. Now, one example I've talked about before, it's in 1 Kings 18:24, when Elijah is setting up the contest with the prophets of Baal to decide who can call down phaser fire to consume a wetted down offering. And you call on the name of your gods, Elohim, it says, and I will call on the name of Yahweh, and may the best God win, or something like that. And Moses said, We will go with our young and with our old, with our sons and with our daughters, with our flocks and with our herds will we go, for we must hold a feast unto the Lord. And he said unto them, Let the Lord be so with you, as I will let you go, and your little ones, look to it, for evil is before you. So he sees through their plan, their evil plan from his perspective. Because why would they need to take all the old folks, all the youngsters, and especially all the livestock, if you were just going to throw a big party for the Yahwehians and then come back? You might take enough animals for the barbecue, but you wouldn't need to take all of them. So Pharaoh denies the request. Not so, he says. Go now, ye that are men, and serve the Lord, for that ye did desire. And they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. So I think what he's saying here is that the men can go and hold the feast, but leave behind all the women and children and old folks, and especially the livestock, except for a few head that you need to sacrifice. And that way they could be sure that they would come back. And the Lord said unto Moses, Stretch out thine hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts, that they may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the land. I pronounced it Cockney style that time. Even all that the hail hath left. And Moses stretched forth his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind upon the land all that day and all that night. And when it was morning, the east wind brought the locusts. Now, if you notice, Moses was kind of lax in the way that he followed instructions. The Yahweh told him to stretch out his hand, and he stretched out his rod instead. I guess he thought that would be more impressive to the Egyptians. But technically, he did stretch out his hand when he stretched forth the rod, because the rod was in his hand. So he got by with it that time. But he was coming to rely on that rod for too much of a prop, and that would get him in trouble later on. And the locusts went up over all the land of Egypt and rested in all the coasts of Egypt. Very grievous were they. Before them there were no such locusts as they, neither after them shall be such. So this was even more than than had been threatened. The threat had been that there would be more locusts than had been seen by their fathers and their fathers' fathers, maybe once in a lifetime. But instead, we get the worst of all time. For they covered the face of the whole earth, so that the land was darkened, and they did eat every herb of the land, and all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left, and there remained not any green thing in the trees, or in the herbs of the field, through all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron in haste, and he said, I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you. Now therefore forgive, I pray thee, my sin only this once, and entreat the Lord your God that he may take away from me this death only. And he went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord. And the Lord turned a mighty strong west wind, which took away the locusts and cast them into the Red Sea. There remained not one locust in all the coasts of Egypt. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he would not let the children of Israel go. It's getting ridiculous. Either he's just Pharaoh, he's just naturally a total prick who doesn't care what's happening, to his country, or the Yahwehlians are manipulating him somehow, hardening his heart, as it says, to make him behave as a total prick just so that they can keep escalating the plagues upon his people in order to make more of an impression for history, for biblical history, which seems like a really cruel thing to do. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, even darkness which may be felt. And Moses stretched forth his hand toward heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. Now, how'd they do that one? Well, maybe they didn't actually do it. Maybe they just saw it coming and adjusted their schedule of predictions accordingly. Biblical historians date these events at around 1500 BC, give or take a few years. And scientists tell us that around 1600 BC, give or take a few years, there was something called the Minoan eruption. There's a Wikipedia article about it which says, quote, the Minoan eruption was a catastrophic volcanic eruption that devastated the Aegean island of Thera, also called Santorini, circa 1600 BCE, which is the same as BC, by the way. It was one of the largest volcanic events on Earth in human history. Its precise date is of high importance and has been fiercely debated among archaeologists and volcanologists for decades without coming to a definite conclusion. So if the biblical historians were maybe off by 50 years in one direction and the scientists were off by 50 years in the other direction, the Minoan eruption and the plague of darkness could have happened at about the same time, and it could have been all the volcanic ash blown into the atmosphere that caused not only the darkness, but the feel of the darkness. It would have been kind of a gritty feel, I expect, from all that ash. But would the ash have made it all the way from the Aegean to Egypt? Well, this same Wikipedia article goes on to say, although there are no clear ancient records of the eruption, its plume and volcanic lightning may have been described in the Egyptian tempest stela. So what's a stela? Dictionary.com says a stela is an upright stone slab or pillar bearing an inscription or design and serving as a monument, marker, or the like. Now, it's hard to imagine the Egyptians putting up a monument to something that wasn't visible in Egypt, so pretty good sign that it was. Now, there's a Wikipedia article on this Egyptian monument, according to which the stela was erected by Pharaoh Ahmose I early in the 18th dynasty of Egypt. Now, oddly enough, the stela is dated at 1550 BC, which is the exact halfway point between the biblical date of the plagues, and the scientific date of the eruption. I don't think that's a coincidence. It's that 50 years off in one direction I was talking about. So could the biblical historians have been off 50 years in the other direction? I think they probably could have. The article goes on, the stela describes a great storm striking Egypt during this time, destroying tombs, temples, and pyramids in the Theban region. That's the region around Thebes, which is the region we're talking about. So could that have been the hailstorm with the 8 to 11 inch hailstones? I think maybe so. Part of the text reads, the gods expressed their discontent. The gods made the sky come with a tempest of rain. But here the translation has the word rain in parenthesis and with a question mark, as if they weren't too sure of the translation. Or maybe the stela was damaged at that point and they couldn't really make out the hieroglyph that they were trying to translate. The translation goes on to say, it caused darkness in the western region, which seems to fit. So was this Amos the first, the Pharaoh that Moses was dealing with? I don't think so. Amos the first began his reign around 1550 BC. So the erection of the stela would have been one of his first official acts. I think the Pharaoh that Moses was dealing with was the previous Pharaoh, Amos' brother, Khamos, whose reign ended about 1550. Khamos' son would have normally become Pharaoh when his father died, but we'll see in the next episode, I think it'd be the next episode, why that didn't happen. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's get back to where we are in Exodus. We're still talking about the 3 days of darkness. And they saw not one another, neither rose any from his place for 3 days. But all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. You know, because of course they did. The Yahwehians knew what was coming because they'd been monitoring the spread of the volcanic ash from their orbit high above Egypt. And they had warned the Israelites to make sure that they had enough lamp oil for 72 hours of darkness. And Pharaoh called unto Moses and said, go ye, serve the Lord, only let your flocks and your herds be stayed. Let your little ones also go with you. So he's gradually giving in a little, trying to compromise. And Moses said, thou must give us also sacrifices and burnt offerings, that we may sacrifice unto the Lord our God. Our cattle also shall go with us. There shall not an hoof be left behind. For thereof must we take to serve the Lord our God, and we know not with what we must serve the Lord until we come thither. So they couldn't just take, you know, a few animals for the barbecue because they couldn't be sure which ones the Yahwehians would think looked the most tasty. Now, that's a likely story, but I guess it's as good as anybody could come up with on the spur of the moment. But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. And Pharaoh said unto him, get thee from me, take heed to thyself, see my face no more, for in that day thou seest my face, thou shalt die. And Moses said, thou hast spoken well, I will see thy face again no more. And that's the end of chapter 10, which is a good stopping point since we're about out of time. So until next time, keep the faith. Always have plenty of lamp oil, and don't give in to the darkness, no matter how many days it lasts.